we look back at 2020. COVID-19 and its impact on the state, from Hoosiers health to the economy, plus the election, Governor Holcomb, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 25th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, we look back at COVID-19 in 2020. The pandemic first hit Indiana in March, and since then, more than 400,000 Hoosiers have tested positive for the virus, while more than 7,000 have died. Indiana, better than many other states, dramatically increased its testing capabilities the last several months, and the number of cases has exploded in recent weeks as Hoosiers increasingly ignore public health advice to wear masks in public and socially distance. Has Indiana handled the public health crisis as best it could? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, every state is struggling with COVID-19. Has Indiana done the best it could?
Well, it clearly hasn't, Brandon. I mean, you know, we're number two in hospitalizations per capita in the country. If we were just average, you could say they'd done the best they could, but we haven't. I mean, we did all right initially, and got through the primary with the mail-in voting, and then the governor and his state chairman were so nervous about mail-in voting in November that they didn't want to do a lockdown, and they didn't want to back up, even though he told us in September, when he loosened the restrictions, that when the data warranted it, he would go back. He didn't. He didn't go back until after the election, and the damage is already done. I mean, we've got hundreds of thousands of people with the virus, and we've got more than 7,000 who have died. And that is not a good record, and that is certainly not the best Indiana could have done. I mean, we have people pushing back about masks and social distancing, but they have that in a lot of states. And yet we're number two in terms of hospitalizations per capita. So that tells you we're not doing what we could have done.
Mike O'Brien, has Indiana done the best it could?
I think we'll look back and certainly have lessons learned and ways we could have done better. I think that's true of the entire country. I think there's a long conversation to have after this to see what the true public health consequences were of the lockdown, of economic strain, of increases in poverty and suicide and abuse, and take a holistic view at what did this, you know, what steps were taken and what were the consequences, and could we have done a better job? I think that's an important conversation that needs to take place after that. So too is the fact that Indiana, while we're second in the country in hospitalizations, we're always forever and ever have been second or first in the country in other respiratory illnesses because we have the highest smoking rate in the country. So when you have a global pandemic that affects people with respiratory illness more severely, you're going to disproportionately have more illness and death. And so putting an emphasis on public health in Indiana going forward is got to be a priority too.
Well, that would be good if we increased the cigarette tax, and also we stopped being 48 out of the 50 states in the amount of money we spend on public health.
John Schwanes, Speaker Todd Houston has talked about exactly what Mike O'Brien just talked about, that we've learned that Indiana is disproportionately negative health overall coming into the pandemic, has had a disproportionately negative effect on how we have been doing during the pandemic. Is that something was Indiana always set up to fail because of what we had going in?
Well, I think certainly the state was at a disadvantage because of the health habits of its population. You talked about respiratory issues, and that probably is attributable in part to a relatively high rate of smokers smoking in the state. We have the flip side of that is we're not very good at exercising. If you look at the state as a whole, again, you look at these are the rankings. We're pretty much at the bottom when it comes to a lot of these things, except for being overweight. Then we skyrocket to the top. And I don't know if we're number one with a foam finger, but we're unfortunately toward the top of that category. So, yeah, relatively speaking, we weren't a very healthy state to begin with, and that probably didn't leave us well-suited to deal with with the pandemic.
And Nikki, Mike O'Brien has talked about this on the show quite a lot in the last few months, but is some of how you look at Indiana's performance when it comes to COVID-19 a sort of necessary result of there is a large segment of Hoosiers who, more than just resisting government directives, take pleasure in thumbing their nose at government directives?
Well, some of them do, but I also think there's been a little confusion some on the directives. And obviously the mask mandate is the most obvious one for you to come out and have a mask mandate and then immediately say there's no enforcement, that it's education only, you know, that, you know, people say, oh, well, then I don't have to wear it. So, you know, that's one example of where some clearer, I guess, wording or whatever might have helped a bit.
All right. Well, the COVID-19 pandemic hasn't just impacted health. Of course, it's also dealt a huge blow to the Hoosier economy. Now, Governor Holcomb issued a statewide stay-at-home order in March that for weeks closed some businesses while forcing others to adjust how they work. And those adjustments have remained for many since, whether shifting to work from home, to reimagining their spaces to account for social distancing. There's also been a paucity of federal help in recent months. Congress approved relief packages that totaled trillions of dollars in the pandemic's first months, including $1,200 stimulus checks and loans for small businesses. But little to no help has come since, keeping in mind that we are taping this before we find out if the federal government decides to include another relief package, which seems to change by the minute. So you'll forgive us for that. Mike O'Brien, I asked earlier if Indiana has done the best it could to address the pandemic on the health side. Has the federal government done the best it could on the economic side?
Certainly not. I mean, the first round of the first and only round of stimulus was a fairly blunt reaction to the economic impact that COVID was having on the country. We mailed indiscriminately, loaned money to businesses, indiscriminately gave checks to people who may or may not have needed them. And we know in Indiana that higher than average wage jobs have almost entirely returned to pre-COVID levels. So if a second round of stimulus comes, we're mailing those people $1,200 checks again, that doesn't make any sense because they've not been harmed economically. They're working from home. They're, those companies have adapted. And there are parts of the economy that are making a lot of money that were given loans that applied for that. It was completely indiscriminate and with no back end, and maybe we will one day, but no back end understanding of whether or not what we were doing was actually effective. And so the next round of stimulus have got to be targeted at certain people in service industries. I mean, it's great that the statewide unemployment rate in Indiana is coming down and that it's really low for well-educated people. It's 55% on the east side of Indianapolis, you know, because those people work in service industry jobs in places that have been shut down now for 6 or 8 months. So there was no thoughtfulness about the federal efforts to deliver stimulus to people that actually needed it instead of just throwing money around. And we'll hope maybe one day there'll be an assessment of whether or not any of that actually worked.
And Delaney, Todd Young, Indiana Senator Todd Young has talked a lot about that in recent months, that another relief package is needed, but we got to make sure that we're helping the people who need it in terms of, you know, using our dollars as wisely as we can. But in that sense, because this has continued to drag out so long, is that becoming, you know, perfect is the enemy of the good here?
Oh, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I frankly think that first round of stimulus, Mike is exactly right about that. The first round of stimulus payments and loans will probably be a criminal defense attorney full employment bill for the next 5 years, because there are going to be a lot of investigations into how that was appropriated and whether it was appropriated appropriately. So there is that. I mean, we have people, there is no question that there are people that are hurting, that are going to lose their homes, that they can't pay their student loans, they can't pay their rent, they can't pay for food on the table. And that's what's so appalling about taking the $600 million and putting it into the unemployment. Because, you know, employers like me who would pay more to repay that unemployment, and even though I haven't laid anybody off, have 2 years to do that without any interest. But the people that are hurting right now. And I'd like to think that they're going to spend the time and effort to make sure that that money's targeted. But when you let it go to the last hour and you have ridiculous requirements like Mitch McConnell saying states can't get aid, I'm not entirely sure it's going to be as well thought out as we might like to see it.
Nikki Kelly, I've been talking about the federal government. The state got $2.4 billion from the CARES Act, that federal relief package. It's been spending the last 9 months, 8 months, figuring out how to spend that money to more than a little criticism, particularly from Democrats. But how much long? I mean, well, we're coming down to it now, but do you think that state officials did the best they could given the inconsistent messages they got about that money from the federal government?
I think it was really hard for them in the beginning. The guidance on what you could use it for and couldn't wasn't clear. The guidance changed a couple times. So that was definitely not helping them. Also, I feel like they were a bit strung along because we thought there was going to be another stimulus and maybe they'd free up the flexibility and what you could use it on. So we kind of held on to the money in case, but that flexibility never came. So in the end, we did have a lot of money sitting there that really could have helped people in a more targeted manner, especially, for instance, restaurant workers or something like that, who could show, you know, how much their tips have gone down or how, you know, if they still had a job at all. Yeah. So I do think that's one legitimate criticism, is that, you know, we held on to that money a little bit too long.
And John Schwann, as I noted at the top of this conversation, we're taping this before we know if there will be another federal relief package here in 2020. If there is another one of these, which moots a lot of this conversation, but that's actually my question. If there is another federal relief package before the end of the year or quickly after the beginning of the year, does that help paste over some of the frustration that people have been feeling for the last 8 months?
It helps, but it's not going to solve the problem. You know, I'm no expert on macroeconomics, but presumably the members of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States are. And these are people who have said, regardless of their party affiliation or their how they were appointed, who appointed them, you know, the key here is flood the market, if you will, right now with money. Keep fluidity, keep businesses that are at risk of closing open. Worry about some of the niceties of this on the back end. And I don't think the country has done that overall. And I think we will see a lot of small businesses suffer because while people were trying to figure out how to get the funds channeled to them in some very neat, proper fashion, they just went bust in the meantime. So I'll defer to the Federal Reserve, which Chairman Powell and others were all along on record saying, let's just get the money out there, let's shore up the system, and again, worry about some of the particulars later.
Well, we have a Democratic president coming into office, so it's time to worry about the deficit again. 2020 was also, of course, an election year, one that drove record turnout around the country, even in the midst of the pandemic, including here in Indiana. Now, President Trump lost the popular vote by 7 million and lost the Electoral College vote by the same margin he won it 4 years ago. Yet Republicans made significant gains in the U.S. House while still in the minority and look likely to keep a majority in the Senate pending results of two runoff elections in Georgia. Here in Indiana, the GOP strengthened its grip on state government. Eric Holcomb was reelected governor in a landslide. Todd Rokita easily ran away with the race for attorney general. And Republicans grew their supermajority in the House while only dropping one seat in the Senate. Nikki Kelly, if you're a Republican voter or a Republican official, despite President Trump's defeat, are you feeling pretty good about how this year went politics-wise?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Trump is like his own factor, right? You know, you can't really gauge the popularity of conservatism and the Republican Party on that alone, because his behavior and his abrasiveness just throws some people off, and no matter what, they won't vote for him. So, but when you look, as you listed, all the races and the issues that have been here, I mean, absolutely, the Republican Party here is in strongest, you know, situation that I've seen in decades.
John Schwannis, if you're a Democrat, then conversely, yes, the president you disliked so much is going to be gone, but you lost just about everything else, certainly here in Indiana, for the most part. So how negative are you feeling about 2020?
Well, I guess to be flippant, there's nowhere else to go downward. So I guess looking forward and trying to build, you do certainly have, if you're a Democrat, an ally in the White House who could presumably help build the kind of agenda and the kind of platform and coalition that would serve you well in future elections. But I'm not sure that all Republicans are as sanguine as Nikki suggested. Perhaps if you're a Republican leader in the House or Senate, you've got to deal. This is not a monolithic party. It never was, but certainly now with the emergence of Donald Trump as a power kingmaker and a power broker, you're bringing people and ideas into the party that weren't there 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So to try to marshal that and try to manage that, if you're, say, a leader in the Indiana House or Senate, supermajority may be a super pain in the butt if you're trying to do that. And I think it's a discussion nationally that Republicans are going to have about what are we going to be when we grow up? What is the party going to be? Is it what Donald Trump has introduced in terms of philosophy or lack thereof? Or is it the tenets of the Republican Party that have been around for decades?
Well, still, I think I'd rather have the problem of managing a supermajority than a superminority. Mike O'Brien, thinking about more of at the federal level, how much is, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, how much is how you're going to feel about how 2020 went dependent on the results of an election that will happen at the very beginning of 2021 in Georgia?
Yeah, that's a big deal, right? I mean, so we don't know what the outcome is in that part. If Republicans win that seat in Georgia, which I think they will, but it'll be close. You can kind of cap this off as a pretty good year. You never want to lose the White House. It's the seat of power in the United States. But if you look around the country, I mean, Democrats, this was supposed to be a washout election for Republicans. And at exactly the wrong time when you're losing state houses, trying to redistricting. And none of that happened. I mean, if you look locally in Indiana, Democrats were never better organized. They were never better funded. They never fielded more or better quality candidates. And they lost everything. So I think it was I think overall it was a really good day for Republicans or year for Republicans, but for losing the White House and voters clearly separated in their minds Donald Trump, who's a brand unto himself, and the Republicans down ballot.
Ann Delaney, to the point John Schwanis made, you are an Indiana Democrat. I don't have to ask that hypothetically. As an Indiana Democrat, do you feel like you've hit rock bottom after the 2020 election results?
Well, it certainly was discouraging because we had the better candidates in many of those races. But, you know, the decision they made not to allow voting by mail had an impact here. You keep talking about the fact that we had a record. You neglect to mention the fact that we are 15 percentage points below the average, and we're still ranked in the bottom 10 for turnout. So that has an impact, and certainly it's discouraging, but frankly, the one ray of light was to get Donald Trump out of the White House, because I think our country would have been destroyed with four more years of him in there. And the irony from the Republican perspective, it was certainly a good year for them. The question is, what happens now? Because Donald Trump isn't going away. Whether he runs again or just continues to be a power broker outside, the Republican Party is going to just have to decide whether they're going to stand with him and his white supremacists and his misogynists and his lying and his cheating and all the rest of that, or they're going to repudiate him. And if they repudiate him, they have the chance that he'll run as a third-party candidate. And if he runs as a third-party candidate, we all know the kind of havoc that can wreak. It's discouraging. And I felt so bad for candidates that we fielded that were excellent and frankly, so much better than the Republicans that won in many of these districts. There'll be another day. And the pendulum, as we know, from 74 and 78, it swings both ways.
Well, as I just mentioned, Governor Eric Holcomb secured re-election in 2020 by a mile, winning the highest share of the vote in the governor's race since Mitch Daniels' re-election and earning the most votes ever for an Indiana gubernatorial candidate. Now, that's as he faced challenges from the left and right, including the best governor's race performance by a libertarian in state history. Governor Holcomb also likely appeared on TV and radio more this year than any Hoosier governor in a long time, because since the start of the pandemic, Holcomb delivered COVID-19 briefings every week except one. Now, John Schwanis, how would you rate Governor Holcomb's 2020?
No, I think a more important rating than anything I would assign is what voters in Indiana said. And they said, hey, you're doing a good job. And I guess by all accounts, he has. And I think that the approach he has taken from day one, which is let's stay away from sort of the red meat politics. Let's stay away from, call it social issues, as his predecessor once removed, Mitch Daniels, did, and focus on practical good government, on economic stewardship, served him well. I mean, he's there's not a lot of people who have him on dartboards in their basement. You know, like, this is enemy number one that we have to, maybe Ann, I don't know, but most people, you know.
No, John, thank you, though.
He's not somebody that it's easy to hate, and which, frankly, a lot of other governors around the country have not been so successful in trying to walk a middle ground. So all in all, COVID notwithstanding, I'd say it was a pretty successful a year for him.
Looking back, Nikki Kelly, really at Governor Holcomb's whole first term, do you think, it's hard to look at this in the short term, but do you think that people will look back fairly favorably on his job performance in his first term as governor?
Well, yeah, and I think his election results show that. I think over 4 years, what we can establish, and some people said this earlier, is he's kind of a meat and potatoes governor. Like, he focuses on the basics. He's not extreme either way. And that isn't always sexy or you know, fancy, but it's clearly getting the job done in Hoosier's group.
Ann Delaney, how would you rate Governor Holcomb's first term as governor?
Well, I think he's been a decent caretaker. I think that Nikki is right. He hasn't gone to any extreme on any of the issues. And John's right that he stayed away from the social issues. The problem I have with him is he hasn't done anything. You know, the state has significant problems. It had significant problems with the nursing homes, and he punted that. School funding, and he punted that. I mean, he just doesn't have the kind of vision to try to improve the state, either the health or the education or anything else. I mean, he does everything in little tiny baby steps. And, you know, that may be what Hoosiers want. They don't want any change. They don't want a decent standard of living or of health care here. And if that's what the voters want, they certainly got it with Eric Holcomb in his first term.
Mike O'Brien, I want to focus on one word that Ann used in her answer, which is caretaker. Do you think that people look at Eric Holcomb after the tumult of a Mike Pence administration? Do you think that people do look at Eric Holcomb as a sort of caretaker governor in a sense?
I think in part, sure, because a lot of the good decisions that have been made over the course of the last 12 years of Republican leadership in the governor's office need to be continued and maintained. Whether it's balanced, and we don't—it's no fun to talk about balanced budgets. You're not making any headlines, but it's important to have balanced budgets, and we didn't for a long time, and we do now, and we have now for the last 15 years. So, I think
you've
always
had balanced budgets.
I think you
reflect. You've always had them.
I think he reflects the pragmatism of most Hoosiers. I think he's taken very much the approach that Mitch Daniels took when he and I both worked for him, which was when we're elected, we're a governor for everybody, and we're checking partisanship at the door. And I think he's tried to strike or pick up issues that affect the most Hoosiers possible in the most positive way, without sitting on the fringe or just servicing one constituency or the other. And I think that gets rewarded. It's a little tricky, and you know, as we know in American politics and primaries, to walk a middle ground. But once you're there, you have the opportunity to be a leader for everybody, and that's what he's done.
All right. Well, as you look back at 2020, who is your biggest winner in the Hoosier political scene? We'll start with you, Ann Delaney.
Oh, I think Carl Huffman. I mean, he was able to keep the vote down and was able to keep the supermajorities in the legislature, and he did it all with the assistance of Eric Holcomb, so he's obviously the big winner.
I think he'll feel like a big winner when you get his name correct. Kyle Huffer. Mike O'Brien, Huffer. Biggest winner.
Excuse me.
I'll go with Kyle Huffer, too. Record turnout, record vote in really difficult times, and a record outcome for Republicans. Not only do we expand the big ticket items in the General Assembly and keep the governor's office at a record margin, we have more mayors, and at the end of his tenure, I don't know if it's the end of it or not, but the end of his first 4 years as chairman, more local elected officials, more mayors than we've had in the history of the state. So, I mean, by any measuring stick, he's the winner in Indiana politics this year.
Very quickly, Nikki Kelly, biggest winner.
I'm going to go with Pete Buttigieg. He had a fascinating year, captured the attention of the country, and has set himself up for the future.
John Schwanitz, quickly, biggest winner.
Certain law professor from the University of Notre Dame.
Uh-huh. My biggest winner is Senator Todd Young, led the Senate reelection effort and is probably going to hold on to majority. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. That is Indiana Week in Review for this week and this year. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanitz of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please wear a mask, have a great holiday, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana year and an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.